Welcome to the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee, March 27, 2025. We only have one item on the agenda today, Senate File 1063. Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senator Patton are both here because this is a bill that contained parts of some of her legislation, parts of some of mine, and we merged them together in the last committee, and we are changing the author. She's going to be the chief author of this. She's been serving on the ombuds. She's been serving on the HOA, the Homeowner Association Task Force, which has been a bipartisan task force to deal with some of the issues with HOAs. Real quick as background for people who haven't been tracking this very much, I think as much as 83% of all new housing being constructed is in HOAs. A third of all the housing stock in the country right now is in HOA territory, and that may be fine, but it's a complicated thing because often they have many of the roles that local governments play, and there are times when it's not well understood. They're often boards of HOAs are individual homeowners in the association. Many of them have no background or particular interest in governing some of this. The task force has been working on this, making some great progress on it. Very pleased with the work they've been doing. The Senate members of this are Senator Pa and Senator Lucero, and they put together a bill that's sort of a companion bill to this, Senate File 1750. Senator Lucero is offering that has many of the recommendations, and I would argue that this bill is a partnership with this. This bill would create an ombudsperson to help address conflicts between individuals and homeowners and the associations. And it recognizes that there are many times homeowners are busy trying to pay the bills and everything else. And there have been, I think everybody can find plenty of horror stories. And I think that the Senate File 1750 will address many of them. This bill is to fill in some of the gaps that bill would not do. Again, I think that we see this as a partner bill to it. It creates an ombudsperson with the bill and has two provisions. I mean, the establishment of it spells out their purpose. It's ombudsman created within the Department of Commerce to assist unit owners in enforcing their rights and to facilitate resolution of disputes between unit owners and associations. And we have a similar model for this in the Office of the Ombudsman for Long-Term Care, where they serve two roles. They are explicitly required to represent the interests of patients in long-term care facilities to help them because they are often overwhelmed by the institution that has power over a lot of things. If they have conflicts, they need somebody they can turn to rather than going to court. And in doing so, the ombudsman serves a very useful function. That ombudsman, like this one, would also have the dual role if there are disputes to try and mediate the disputes. This legislation clearly spells out that in dispute resolution, the mediator cannot make rulings, cannot make determinations. That's something that we would leave up to the courts. This is not arbitration, it's simply mediation, I think, which is in both sides' interest. And so we would be allowing them to do both of those roles. The difference between this ombudsman for long-term care is that in this case, because sometimes homeowner associations are very small and it may be 10 units of townhomes, and they're of those 10 units, they find a board to represent them who have no background, no knowledge. So we would be requiring this ombudsman to provide information and resources to not just the homeowners, but also the association, so everybody understands the laws and the rules and make sure that the homeowner, the local agreement that they have, the local association bylaws and so on, do not conflict with the law and that they're fairly implemented. So this would be very similar to what the Office of Ombudsman for Long-Term Care does, namely representing the, in this case, the homeowners, also mediating and also providing information and background and help to both, to every party involved in it, which I think is an important role. And that's the basically the first half of the bill. The second half of the bill is what came from Senator Paugh. It would be a registration of these common interest communities. And I will turn it over to Senator Paugh because she is the expert in that portion and can explain that, and then we can take questions.
Senator Paugh.
Thank you, Chair Klein and committee members. I know many of you have already heard that we are taking up the issue of HOA this year and trying to make strides in protecting homeowners. You may be shocked to know that Minnesota has approximately 7,950 common interest community associations, impacting over 1.5 million homeowners that live under an HOA governance. HOAs wield enormous power. They set rules, they levy fines, they can even evict people, foreclose upon their home, yet they operate without the basic transparency that we would expect from any governing body. That is why this bill and the bills that we are taking up this session is so crucial, because we will be addressing the widespread issues that have been emerging in recent years. Establishing a required registration of HOAs so that basic information about an HOA is actually available to the public. Because right now, HOAs register as an entity at the Secretary of State, but there is no, unless they put HOA or CIC in their actual name, there's no way to know that they're actually an HOA. And there's no way to pull that information from the Office of Secretary of State's database. So if someone were looking to buy a home in an HOA, they wanted to find out who manages that HOA or who owns that HOA, it would be really hard to do so unless that information was public, or to even get some of their bylaws in operating, paperwork as to what their bylaws are, their the way that they're organized as an HOA. And so we're hoping that with this bill, it will bring some transparency to the way HOAs are operated. And not only that, but it will also, with the ombudsperson's bill, that it will also provide a place where people can go and mediate or get information and resources. Number one is education resource, and then, of course, mediation services as well. Thank you, Chair and members, for hearing our bill.
Thank you, Senator Paugh and Senator Marty. And before we go to testifiers, I'm just going to point out in the bill that, well, if the committee chooses to do so, the motion today will be to move this to state and local government. Members have already observed, I'm sure, that we don't have a fiscal note yet. In the bill as it's in front of us, it conceives of both a fee on these HOAs and also a general fund appropriation to sort of get this program going. But we'll be able to, I think, speak to that more intelligently when this comes back to our committee, when we'll have a full fiscal note and a sense of what these costs are. So I think the financing of this proposal should not be a barrier to moving it along today, because we'll get another bite at the apple. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'll call forward Becky Cole. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Cole. Please introduce yourself when you're ready and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Becky Cole. I am an HOA homeowner, and I also hear stories from people all over the state who have contacted me. I am in support of this because this will also help capture and document business practices that are allowed in running an association. For example, a homeowner in Blaine had a lockbox put on his home when the HOA forced him to have work done, that even the contractor of the HOA couldn't figure out why it was being done. It was done inside of his house. It wasn't done outside. and then they threatened him with foreclosure. The total amount he had to pay for the additional damage they did to his home was $55,481.45. $4,268 of this is collection cost, $24,213.16 is legal fees, and the remaining is the repair cost to its contractor. He tried to settle with them, but then he was asked to sign a waiver for not talking about this. He didn't sign it, but there's nothing that prevents this from happening to this family again. Then there's a disabled homeowner in Eagan who continues to be harassed by her HOA over a shed she built on her property with the approval from the city. The city knows this, as one of the council members has even been to her house, but the city refuses to get involved, even though this is one of the neighborhoods they created and it's not against the bylaws of the association. Then you get to mine, and I've got a whole, I could take up the whole afternoon on my issues, but one of the things that stands out for me is none of the bank accounts for my association are even in Minnesota. They are managed solely by the management company, and management companies in Minnesota are not even required to be licensed. So we've got these people managing one account in particular. We've got a few, but one account has got $1.8 million in that account. It's not a business practice that would be tolerated by any other business, but yet we don't get a say in that. We don't have a choice in how they handle our money or what the financial decisions they're making for us. Got many more stories about the unfortunate business practices that go well beyond not getting along with the board. And there's nothing so far that requires anyone on the board or management companies to justify their conduct or even to make sense. In any other industry, these types of things would be wrong. We need a new industry standard for homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cole. Could you make room, please, at the table for Ron Elwood to come forward? Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Elwood. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. And we are pleased to be here in strong support of Senate File 1063. That would establish an ombudsman for common interest communities and a database at the Department of Commerce. I truly believe that Senate File 1063 is needed and will make a difference. Legal Aid has represented many homeowners in disputes with HOAs, and they are primarily elderly homeowners, and that's where they come to Legal Aid with those problems. The HOA working group that Senator Pa was one of the leaders on took about 40 hours of testimony across the state, had many, many listening sessions, and the working group was made up of 20 members with interested stakeholders from both homeowners' side and the HOA side. This recommendation to establish the Ombuds Office was consensus and unanimous, and it was supported by everybody. The top themes really that came out of that working group were A, the need for homeowner and board member education. B, the need for a third-party dispute resolution function and help for people to resolve their disputes amicably. And third, the need for plain language explanations of the very complex and dense Chapter 515, which governs HOA or CICs, and the HOA governing documents, all very complicated. So subdivision 4, starting on line 2.9, fulfills all of those functions and provides the response to the needs that were articulated during the HOA working group. The fact is that often there's no attorney or professional management at the HOAs. Many people have said that these are volunteers and homeowners themselves, but they're not knowledgeable in the law or the governing documents, and it's good that they volunteer and otherwise what people do, but that is a source, in many cases, of where the conflicts arise. And so often the disputes are about relatively minor things. Sometimes there's interpersonal issues that get in the way. And consequently, I think the working group heard over and over and over again, and probably you've heard from constituents in your inboxes, that there's nowhere to turn when people feel that they've been unjustly aggrieved by a decision of the board. And so that's why the establishment of the CIC ombudsman is needed. It would take the temperature down in many cases and avoid unnecessary escalation of complaints and disputes and eliminate or at least reduce frustration and foreclosures. So finally, I think we all agree that this would be beneficial to know who and where these places are, which is the second part of the bill, and I sure hope you'll be able to find the funds at the end of the day to make this a reality. Thanks for letting me testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Can Patrick Hines come forward?
I'm sorry?
No, thank you.
Oh.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines with Messerly Kramer. I'm here on behalf of the Community Associations Institute Minnesota chapter, which represents the interests of homeowner associations. Our members include residents, board members, property management companies, law firms, contractors, really anyone who lives in or works with homeowner associations. I want to thank Senators Pa and Marty for bringing this bill forward. And in particular, you'll note that this is the first engrossment. And I think the changes that were made in the previous committee are a great improvement to the bill. And that's why CAI is here in support of it. It does not start with the premise that all HOAs are broken or bad. It, I think, has the premise that you have over a million people living in associations in Minnesota. There are going to be disputes between a resident and a board, between residents themselves. And I do think, as Mr. Elwood eloquently said, there is a need to have someone, a third party neutral, be there for residents and board members when they need help, when they can't resolve an issue. And I think it will relieve a lot of the pressure that these boards and residents feel. And I think it will also serve an important role for the legislature. Some of the duties of the ombudsperson would include gathering data about the complaints they receive. They can use this information to inform the legislature as you make decisions about other legislation regulating HOAs. Article 2, the registration piece, we have worked for a number of years and talked to the Secretary of State's office multiple times about whether the annual registration as a nonprofit corporation could include additional information so that you would know exactly how many associations are there instead of guessing, and also to provide a little more information to people. This takes a slightly different approach by going through the Department of Commerce. I think that's obviously a decision for the legislature, especially since there'd need to be funding for it. But I think overall, the intent of Article 2 is a good one and something we also support. Just a couple specific provisions about Article 2. It would require that the board members provide contact information. Again, these board members are residents, they are volunteers, and I'm fairly certain that a large number of board members would be unhappy if they had to put their names, home addresses, and telephone numbers into a public database. So the bill does make that information private, which I think is important. I also think some of the information it requests regarding the details of private contracts between homeowner associations and management companies, including the pricing of it, would be problematic to have that information publicly available on a website. They are private contracts, and residents of an association should have access to that information. I've heard stories where people have had difficulty getting it. I think that's unfortunate. That should not be the norm. But I also don't think that those private contracts should be published online like that. Again, overall, it's really it's beyond moving in the right direction. It's really close to where it needs to be. I'm very pleased that we've been able to work with Legal Aid and the bill authors to get this far. And I know money is difficult this session, but I do think it would be a good use of resources of the state to establish the ombudsperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Members, we can go to questions. I really like Article 2, Senator Pa, the registration, so we can just inform ourselves at the legislature about, you said it's over a million people that are living in these common interest communities, and we don't have our arms around that or a full understanding of that. The question that comes to mind for me, I guess any worker is more than no worker, but this ombudsperson certainly is going to have their work cut out for them, aren't they? I mean, over a million people who might have complaints and all these nebulous organizations. And how would you sort of answer that concern that this guy has a lot of job for one person?
Mr. Chair, yes, I think that's, I don't think they're gonna be taking every case and going to mediation on this. I think a lot of, we hope the biggest thing they're able to do is prevent the need for mediation by making sure homeowner associations understand the law, that they have, that they're being transparent with their communities, that people have a way to work it out themselves without needing to go to mediation type of thing. I think just simply the information available to people will be a big step forward. And the ombudsperson, by providing, we refer the fact they're supposed to provide information and referrals to people. I think a lot of times, in the end, people, the only place they know to go to is the courts. And that's not efficient for anyone. People can't afford to go to court, and it's not efficient for anyone involved because they, as residents, as owners, will end up paying some of the costs for that anyway. I think biggest thing I think this may help with, along with, and again, I want to say that Senator Lucero's bill, which is sort of a working in tandem with this bill, will avoid a lot of the things where there have been conflicts of interest, which I think a lot of residents have been concerned. They did this repair work, and why we didn't even need it, and they overcharged for it and everything else. Well, the manager or the board had somebody, had a family member or some conflict of interest kind of thing. We want to prevent that, and I think this bill is going to do a smaller part than the Lucero Pa bill, the one that came out of the work group. I think this is a small addition to that, and I think the ombudsman is not going to be a super person, a superhero who can do everything to everyone, but I think this will help in a lot of cases. And one of the things we're asking them to do is they gather complaints, because they're going to be hearing from these folks, that they can try and help steer them in the right way, so that we as legislators, so that we as a state know where the biggest problems are, can address that either through more legislation or more of something else. But I'm hopeful that they can. Yes, you and I know that they have an office. If they get two or three people, I'm not sure. They had a fiscal note on that part of the bill last year. I'm not sure how many people that was envisioning, but it's not going to be a huge office of hundreds of people. It's just, that's not realistic. But I think they'll be able to address some of the worst cases, and more importantly, prevent a lot of cases from becoming worst cases first.
Senator Marty, we have in front of us an amendment which looks to be technical. It's the A4. Was that from
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Senate Council found some technical changes they would like to have us include.
And it's not this isn't first committee stop, so it's not an author's amendment. Right. So why don't we have Council describe that amendment for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this is actually was requested by the revisers. It's just purely technical to make a couple corrections here in this stop. It's a little bit easier for us to do it than it is for them. So it's just purely technical.
Members have the A4 in front of them. Any questions on that amendment? Senator Wicklund, you willing to offer that? Senator Wicklund offers the A4. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A4 is adopted. Member questions or comments? Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate all the conversations this session on HOAs, and the one number that sticks with me is that over 80% of new single-family homes, I believe, that are being built in Minnesota are within an HOA. That's astounding, right? You know, we built a lot of cities and housing before HOAs came along, and it seems like this has become a too often used tool by municipalities to effectively force people into HOAs and offload infrastructure costs and additional cost onto new home buyers or seniors who are maybe moving, downsizing into a townhome or some of the other situations that come up. And so I appreciate all the work that's happened, and Senator Marty and Senator Pai, your work on this issue. I just think it's very important that if this ombudsman moves forward, that we handle what I think is the most important piece of the HOA package, which is on disallowing municipalities from requiring an HOA. If someone wants to set up an HOA, great, they can do it. But we shouldn't have municipalities that regularly require Minnesota homeowners, whether they like it or not, that they have to be in an HOA. And I think that's an important piece that we need to address as well, in addition to what this bill goes after. Mr. Chair, I did have one question, and it's regarding small HOAs. In the rural area I represent, sometimes there'll actually be an HOA that might only have two homeowners or three homeowners, and the only thing they do is once a year, once every 2 years, they have to pay someone to come and work on their gravel road. And I just wondered if maybe it would make sense to have a lower fee schedule or exempt them from registering, or just these small groups that maybe don't even have any assets at all that they hold. It might just be a pass-through for very periodical cost. Just wanted to see if you had thought about those. And I look here in the fee schedule, the smallest is for under 20 units, but just wondered if it made sense to exempt these two-person, three-person HOAs.
Senator Pop.
Thank you, Chair Klein, and thank you, Senator Rasmussen, for that question. We have thought about what the fee may be for these units, and that's why we have it in the three tier, although we are open to ideas of changing that tier fee schedule. In the initial numbers that we're thinking about, it would be under $100, it'd be $100 or less for majority of the HOAs. And the ones in the higher bracket would be 150. The ones at the lowest bracket is going to be probably $50 a year. And we think that that would probably bring in about almost $1 million in if we spread it among all the 7,950 associations that we think exist here, because again, there's no registration, so we don't have an accurate number. I've talked to HOAs in our state, even the small ones, and they're like, for the amount of resources we can get from the bus person's office, one is resources, two is help, and possibly mediation, $100 is nothing compared to our legal fees that we pay just to get simple answers and resources from them. And so I absolutely hear you and open to possibly having no fee for those really, really tiny ones, but I haven't heard from any HOAs that $50 or $100 a year is an issue for them at all.
Any follow-up, Senator Rasmussen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Pott. I would say the only thing I would say is some of these smaller HOAs just might not even know about this effort, right, going through, and so that would just be something to think about and maybe talk to stakeholders on if there are, you know, two household, three household HOAs mm-hmm. that have very limited expenses. Maybe there's something that I just won't want them to miss this requirement and get caught up and behind on fees and issues like that. But I think overall I support the broader HOA reform effort and appreciate you guys working on it.
Senator Daines.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this really isn't a question, but just a comment. I had served on a HOA association for several years. And it seemed like most of the time when we had complaints, what it amounted to is some of the owners had not read the bylaws and the rules and regulations before they bought their property. After they bought the property, they wanted to do something, and they found out it was against the rules and regulations. So then they wanted to change it, and they'd get upset. Since I've been in the Senate, I've had several calls on disputes on these homeowners associations. And the majority of those ended up being the people either did not read the rules and regulations, or they read them and figured that they didn't, that wouldn't interfere with them. And then they wanted to do something and found out that it wasn't going to be allowed to be done because of the board. So sometimes I'm not so sure we should be so quick to react on some of this stuff until we really know what kind of a percentage that problem is causing. The other question I, not question, but comment I have is I get concerned when we're going to be posting people's names and addresses and stuff like that. That does concern me. And I think there maybe needs to be something done, but I'm not so sure that this is the answer here. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done on this yet. And so I would hope that if it gets to the next committee you're going to, I hope that this stuff gets cleaned up before it gets to the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, thank you for both of the last two comments. Senator Dames, first with the fact, yes, I think a lot of homeowners buy into property and they feel they were not properly informed about what this means. They may know the fee, but they don't know some of the regulations and so on. And some of the regulations in some cases may be heavy-handed as well. I think that's one of the reasons that I think the other bill that goes along with this is so important as well, because we want to make sure people are aware what they're getting into, because yes, oh, I didn't know I have this, now I got to live within these rules. But we want to make sure, and part of this and the other bill are to make sure those rules are fair and that it's not, I mean, there are cases where people have had their homes foreclosed on them because they were behind on a few penalty payments they had, and outrageous behavior that I think, I hope, are few and far between, but that's why the Senate File 1750 will help address that. And Senator Rasmussen, to your point about how this is being used too much, yeah, these are often, in effect, local governments and unelected local, they're elected by board, by community where people aren't really aware they're the power they have. And as you point out, some cities have been figuring, oh, rather than us have to worry about some of the development stuff, we'll just require them to form a HOA. And there was an article about that mentioned this the other day in the paper, and it really unfortunate, both the neither the developer nor the homeowners wanted to do this, but they were forced by the city to do so. And I think that that's city failing to do its duty and using HOAs in a case where they shouldn't be used. So I very much am thinking that this package, and again, I did not serve on the working group, Senator Pa and Senator Lucero, and a couple House members did as well. But I think they've done very good work, and I think it should stop some of those bad practices. I'm not sure that bill or this bill are the full solution, but I think it's a good first step.
Senator Pa.
Thank you, Chair Klein. I just wanted to add to Senator Marty's comments and say, Senator Dames, in Article 2, it does specify that even though we would be collecting board members' information, that that information would be private. The reason why the busperson's office needs that information is they need to know who they can contact if they can't contact the actual HOA, that information that's listed, who's the board president, who's in that board. But that information, board members' information, are all private, so the public would not have access to that information. I thank you for bringing that up. That was a big concern.
The concern is raised that I was unaware of, which is cities sort of requiring these phenomena. You know, often when I get complaints about HOAs, maybe similar to Senator Dames' take, my answer is, well, if you didn't want to live in an HOA, then don't buy an HOA house. And but if there's municipalities requiring it, you know, that seems like unfair practices. Can any of the authors or testifiers comment on how common that practice is, or if that's a phenomenon? Senator Pa.
Senator Klein, sorry, Chair Klein, what you pointed out is actually really, really important, because right now 83% of all homes that are on for sale here in the state of Minnesota is part of an HOA. And I know that people believe that, well, to your point, if I don't want to be part of an HOA, I just won't buy in it. But if most of the developments happening in our state are all part of an HOA, you have no choice but to buy a home in an HOA and then live under that governance. And then these HOAs are, again, they have a lot of power in governing what happens in their neighborhood, but really no oversight and no transparency, really. And so it's really, really hard for Minnesotans to get away from not being a part of an HOA and then also holding their HOAs accountable to transparency. But to your point, right now we're in a place where living in HOA is not a decision. anymore that people can opt to or not. It's just what's out there. They have to.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wondered, I see Ms. Cole might have some comments on
Come
that.
On back to the table, Ms. Cole.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Cole, I'll just, I believe your shirt says my municipality sold my civil rights. And so I would be curious if you have a story to share about the municipality forcing the creation of an HOA.
I do, and thank you for asking me about this. Well, we always get told, read the documents. Well, but the documents, the CCRs are created by the municipality. That is the contract between the municipality and the developer. The CCRs will talk about how the homeowner can be fined if your grass is 2 inches tall, but the municipality won't put in there that if the board embezzles, the board should go to jail. There is no accountability for any of the in that contract with the developer. In our case, Centex was the developer for our properties. Centex doesn't even work in Minnesota anymore. They were bought out by Pulte. Their brand of Pulte, but they don't operate in Minnesota. So if they are on the Articles of Incorporation and they don't care how the board is or how the association is run, then why are we stuck with the rules that they've established with the municipality? Like in the instance of my friend in Egan, she got a permit from the city to build a shed on her property that they don't have connected homes, that they've got their own individual property. She got a permit from the city to build a shed. She's disabled. She wanted the shed for her riding mower so she could take care of her own lawn. The bylaws didn't prohibit this shed, but the board got stuck on whatever they got stuck on, told her if she didn't dismantle it, then they were going to destroy it and charge her for it. The city council has been to her property. The city council knows that this is happening. The city council knows that they are standing in the street taking pictures of her because somehow they are convinced that she's not really disabled. And yet the city council is looking the other way. Now, if the association were running with rules and business practices that the municipality works with, you know, it would be one thing, but they don't. They look the other way. And I've been told a whole bunch of times, well, we don't get involved in disputes between neighbors. Well, this is well beyond disputes between neighbors. And to his point about reading the bylaws, well, the bylaws are not really a contract. And in this case, in the situation in Egan, the bylaws didn't prohibit her from building the shed on her property. And I've got pictures for anybody wants to see what this looks like. It's not one of those metal shed things you have in your backyard. It looks like it's part of her house. The bylaws didn't prohibit it. But when she filed a fair housing complaint, now the board is going to rewrite the bylaws so that it can accommodate their deal against having the shed on her property. Now, if they have to follow the purpose of the association also is not for homeowners. The purpose of the association on the Articles of Incorporation is to enforce the CCRs. CCRs come from the municipality, so that essentially the association is an agent of the municipality, whether they want it to be that way or not. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty or Senator Paugh, is there anything that's in the development of the upcoming legislation or in this legislation that actually prohibits cities from establishing, requiring, I should say, HOAs? I mean, I've seen good HOAs and bad HOAs, but the way I see this is the city is subrogating their responsibilities for enforcement to by requiring the HOAs so they don't have to deal with it at all. And I'm a little bit leery about going down this road because I think the developer, if they want to develop a, have a development with an HOA, should be private property rights. They can do whatever they care to do when they develop it, right? But, you know, having the experience of going out and enforcing some of the city ordinances that are developed, I have a hard time saying, well, who takes precedence, the city or the HOA, or the county and the HOA? Mm-hmm. And there should be a, some establishment. I don't know if you've had this conversations with the Department of Labor and Industry, who has construction codes and standards involved. But you know, the, to me, there, you know, especially in that case where you got a permit. I'm familiar with my son that the city and the county tells him he can put a fence up, but the HOA says he can't put a fence up. So somewhere along the line, we have to develop a hierarchy of who's got the authority on what, and I don't know if you've got any of that in any of the proposed legislation.
Senator Pop.
Thank you, Chair Klein, and thank you, Senator Howell, for that question. Actually, so the SF 1750 bill, Lucero and I are chief authoring for the big HOA bill, will address some of those things. To your point, right now, cities do really can drive what kind of development they want in their city. As a previous council member before coming here serving two terms, I saw in my own city how we like certain types of developments in our city and how we want them to fit into this box of what we like. And that means driving developments into an HOA. The ones that that may be outside of what we like, we tend to say, well, if you propose that, it may be harder, but if you propose this, we would probably vote for that particular development. So we have to be really careful about how cities are driving development in their city, requiring HOAs to be developed, and requiring that certain amenities be part of that HOA. Again, amenities drive whether or not an HOA needs to be established or not. If that's being proposed by a developer, sure. A developer comes in and say, we want to put in a community pool and a community park, and that's going to necessitate an HOA. That's great. But how about if they don't want to put any of those things in? They just want a development that has a common sign that shows that this is, or into this neighborhood, or even a stormwater pond, that that could possibly necessitate an HOA being developed. So lots of things right now that we're trying to do in that one, that 1750 bill that we're still working out with the cities to craft the language that we can come into agreement with that would, one, not necessarily take too much power from them, but at the same time, negotiate enough what they understand they cannot be necessitating every development in their city to be part of an HOA with all their rules. So that's still being worked out. When Lucero and I present that bill, I don't know if we're, I don't think we're coming here, but when we present it in some of the other committees, we will be presenting that in detail. And the bill is still changing as we're going along committees and talking to all the stakeholders.
Senator Howell.
Well, and that's where I do have a problem with cities requiring not only HOAs, but what I view, well, we want pretty, we want this, we want that, because I believe a developer is going to build what people want and they can sell. And if they can't sell it, they're not going to build it. And so if the market will drive what people want, because if people want an HOA, if they want to have their single development, the market will drive that because the developers will build what people will buy. And so I think many times we get too far involved in driving the issue when if we would just let the market drive it, we would be much more successful and we wouldn't create some of these problems that now we got to go back and fix. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any closing comments from the authors?
Mr. Chair, I think this is a step forward. I think the other bill that goes along with this is a step forward. I think there are many HOAs work very well, and their owners and the HOA get along, and there are often some individual homeowners that cause problems, and they're We have to have ways to address that. There are times when the HOA does things that's inappropriate, and we have to have ways to do that. I think this ombudsman legislation is a good part of that. The registration and ombudsperson fits together well. And again, I think I urge your support for this. And also, you may not have to see it in this committee, but the other bill has a lot of wonderful provisions that I think will make the system work better for people, have a lot less conflict.
Thank you, members. It sounds like this will be an area for our contemplation for years to come in this committee. With that, the question is on the motion of Senator Wicklund that Senate File 1063 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Members, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.